This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs, and you're tuning in to episode 539, recorded on March 7th, 2018. This happens to be a Wednesday, because my partner in crime, Sally Draper, was a little under the weather yesterday, and hopefully she's on the uptake. How about it, Sally? Are you going to make it?
I can't not record a Wells Tech, so if you guys can stand my growly voice, then hopefully I can make it through the next bit of discussion time with you, Martin.
Yeah, the audio is kind of important on a podcast, we've found, so we'll do the best that we can. Just have that kill button there if you need to
hack away.
Up along or something, yeah. We are starting a new series. It's March, and for the course of this, well, we'll call it school year, season, whatever, we're taking a theme a month, and our theme for the month of March is back to the basics. So we figured there's a lot of bells and whistles around technology these days, but I think there is also some value in taking a step back and looking at some of the tried and true technologies that are still huge parts of our lives. So our back to the basics focus today for episode 539 is good old email. And I don't know about you, Sally, but email still dominates my day. How about you?
It does. I am in there constantly and communicating with people. There's lots more communication channels nowadays than there used to be when email was brand new. I was thinking back to my days at Blue Cross of Texas, and this would have been around the late 90s, 96, 97. 95, 96, somewhere in there, mid to late 90s, and email was brand new, and we used to type up the inner office memorandums and ship off these sheets of paper. We had this cool little mail truck that was automated that went around the building, and people got their inner office memorandums, and that's how we communicated. So email came about right before I left Blue Cross, And I think you had to have an AOL account, an America Online account, to get email. And we were just experimenting and trying it out and trying to figure out exactly what it was. And so we've come a long way since the mid to late 90s. And I think it's a product that I personally would have a hard time living without in today's day and age.
Yeah, I think for business, it's certainly still the primary tool for communication. And has brought a lot of good with it, but also some challenges with it, as we've talked about over the years. I remember I don't know if I'd call it email, but way back in the day when you still had dial-up and you had to subscribe to a service like CompuServe or Prodigy to actually communicate. And I don't know if they actually called that email, but you had to kind of be in their ecosystem, their system to get messages back and forth. And then AOL came along and I think made that a little bit more accessible. And then, of course, email is more ubiquitous, you know, with each passing day, and you can get it mobile, you can get it in all kinds of different formats. And one of the challenges, of course, is you get too much spam has taken over, and you got to fight that all the time. Another one of the challenges is to know when to use it, because as you mentioned, we have a lot of different options. We have text messaging. We have things like Facebook Messenger and chat apps. We have obviously still a good old phone call. And then we have these kind of hybrid tools that kind of marry instant messaging and email and other things like Slack or Microsoft Teams that are kind of, you know, roll all the, they build themselves as the next generation of email. And I don't know if that's true or not. We talked about Slack maybe last week or 2 weeks ago, but you have to kind of determine when to use what. So when you, when do you use email? What is the, what are the signs that, hey, this needs to be put down or penned in an email?
I guess for me, it's professional communications, communication on my job where I want to have, you know, a history of the conversation and things like that. History
is important, right?
I also have worked with a nonprofit, our local resale shop that here in New Ulm called Treasure House that supports Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School. And we have a lot of conversations of our board of directors via email. And again, we're using like a Google group email. So not only do I have the history in my email, but it's stored as part of that Google group conversation and stuff. So I think some of those occasions, it's really important. Other times I back off and am less formal with messenger apps like you suggested or text messaging or whatever.
Yeah. One thing for me is, you know, if I need an immediate answer, I tend to not use email. So I'll use an IM client or text message or a phone call, something like that. If it's something that can wait, then I know that the person, and sometimes it's knowing who you're emailing to. You know, the frequency at which they would get back to you. But more and more, I think email is a thing that's not checked maybe quite as often as maybe some of these other tools. So it's a matter of trying to figure out, you know, what's the feedback loop? What's the loop like to get communication back? And if it demands more of a same day kind of a thing, I will probably use other tools. But if it's something that maybe is going to have a conversation around it, you know, like you mentioned, and some of these email clients that we're going to talk about here in a minute do a great job at putting all those, melding all those emails together so you can follow a thread. That never used to be the case. Some people don't like that, like the Gmail approach, but I do. I happen to like the ability to kind of see and read through the previous history and kind of put all the emails together. So that's kind of my criteria for email.
Yeah, I'm smiling because I think it's how you can contact a person that probably is comes into play a whole lot. So if you don't know their email address, but you do happen to be Facebook friends, then that's a great way to, you know, dive into Messenger and use it.
Yeah, there are some people that I can only connect with via those tools because either they don't have an email, don't use one, mm-hmm. or their preferred method of communicating is, you know, Facebook Messenger or something like that. So.
Or, you know, the other thing is what tool you have in hand. If you happen to be away from your computer, then I tend to use the messenger type apps through my phone rather than the email. One thing is what kind of mood I'm in and whether I want to type on a tiny keyboard or not.
Right, right, right.
Sometimes you want to, you know, save your more lengthy messages for email when you can sit down at your computer keyboard and type like
That's a great point. Yeah, I'm still a keyboard person. Mm-hmm. I thought over time I'd get used to the tiny keyboard and, you know, using it for text messaging and all the things that you can use your phone for, and I'll mention that in my pick of the week too. But I find that I'm as inconsistent, if not more inconsistent, than I ever was trying to get my text into my phone on that tiny keyboard. Seems like autocorrect isn't as good maybe as it used to. I don't know if it's just me or if I'm, you know, speeding through it too quickly. It's just has not improved over time, which is unfortunate. And I find myself actually using more voice to text than I ever did before, because that's actually more accurate. I can use Google Assistant. I use an iPhone primarily, and I'll use Google Assistant on that, which I think does a little bit better job than Siri, and it just does a little bit better job of transcribing than my fat fingers trying to, you know, get over the keyboard.
Yep. Sometimes I just say, how about you just call me when my son sends me a text, because I'm just too lazy to go back and forth in a lengthy dialogue.
But, and he says, oh, Mom, that's so 1980s.
So yesterday. Right, exactly. Anyway, what about email clients? You know, over time, you kind of went through the history a little bit, CompuServe and AOL. Then it was that we got our email from our internet service provider. And I had at Comcast.net address or whatever, and everybody was kind of in that mode. Now we've kind of graduated to these online tools like Gmail, Yahoo has mail, iCloud has mail, Outlook.com, you know, and using those as our our mail server, basically, and you know, accessing it that way. Are you a particular fan of one of those, or?
Well, as I've mentioned before, for business, I really still use the local Outlook client because it brings together all the things that I need to do my job, including the precious calendar, which I really couldn't live without, and the other features that come along with Outlook are really helpful, and then my contact list is really maintained in Outlook. For personal stuff, I do use Gmail. And I find that that works really well. I've had the same Gmail account forever. I found little reason to jump off of that. Now, when you're talking about Gmail, there's a couple of different options. You can plug or pull Gmail mail into any client you want. You can also use a couple different clients that have been created by Google, the traditional Gmail client, and then what's called Inbox, which is kind of a, I would call it a stripped down version, but I like it because, at least on the phone, I like it because it's very visual and it's got big targets to hit, and I think it does a nice job presenting the information. It doesn't overwhelm you, and you can kind of get through a lot of email quickly, you know, get through all the newsletters you've signed up for that you don't read, or, you know, all the promos or the social notifications that come in. Hey, somebody wants to be your LinkedIn friend, you know, that kind of stuff. You can quickly get rid of that with either swipes or kind of in bulk, and the Inbox does a good job with that. So those are some of the tools that make email a little bit more tolerable. But by and large, I stick with the kind of the more traditional Outlook client or Inbox or Gmail clients. How about you?
Yeah, I would second that. I definitely am an Outlook girl for my work, professional correspondence, but use Gmail for personal. And I guess just to elaborate a little bit further on the term client, because you use that, Martin, and I think kind of looking back in history, many people are familiar with the fact that you needed some software on your desktop. You didn't use your browser to access your email. You used your software. And a lot of people grew up with Outlook. I know Thunderbird is a free mm-hmm. client that still exists out there that you can install. And even if you are using Gmail or whatever type of email, you can send that to that desktop experience. And so if you're looking for that, those kind of things are still out there. But now you can just open your browser anywhere, anytime, log into your account and access things like your Google or Yahoo or Hotmail account or whatever, just using your web browser without any client in between you and the messages.
Yeah, and what's made Outlook viable still is that it doesn't exist just as a client application on a Mac or a PC. It's available on a phone or even on the web. So if you're without your computer or the, wherever it's installed, you can always go to the web and get that information. So it needs to be portable. It needs to be usable on all kinds of, you know, all kinds of different scenarios. So I think most of the vendors have done a nice job with that.
Definitely. Ask you to change hats then, Martin, if you were a church or school or in charge of a church or school's email deployment. What's a wise way to go these days, given all these different options for email?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think a lot of schools struggle with that. But whether you're a G Suite school or not, I guess I would really recommend using Google's email client or their service. Signing up for Gmail G Suite is not a difficult thing. But having that stuff in the cloud and still maybe even being able to pull that down. I know a couple teachers at Peace where I help them out once in a while, have their Gmail, but they like to use Outlook on the desktop yet. So they asked me to hook them up so that they can read their Gmail in their Outlook client, and they like it for some of the reasons that I mentioned before. But kind of a no-brainer for me, I think. It's very easy to use, maintain. You get lots of storage. The tool is configurable. There's really not a lot that you could say that would be a downside to going that route.
Yeah, I agree with you, Martin. And it doesn't mean that you have to have @gmail.com addresses either.
Yeah, in fact, you don't want it.
Right? Yeah. Set it up on your own domain and it looks just like, you know, very professional at Peace Lutheran, whatever it is, .org, whatever your domain name is. And then your teachers, your staff get a very professional email address. Right. And, you know, one thing you skipped when you mentioned all the pluses of Gmail is their spam management, which I've found excellent to be the best out there. You know, I just don't see the junk mail in my inbox on Gmail, and they'll do all that for you, send it to a spam location where you can, you know, peruse it and see if there's anything that got there that shouldn't be. But for the most part, I just regularly flush that out and dump it, and it's gone. And I think they really have a great service there for sure.
From an administrator's perspective, also, it's a win because it's very easy to manage. There are a couple domains that I manage here for the Synod that are on Gmail, one for the Hymnal Project team. And so, you know, when new users come into the system, I get an email that says, hey, can you set this person up? It takes 30 seconds. You can send out an email to that person with their new how to log in, because they've got that all automated, and you know, auto-generate a password. Password resets are easy. It's just a nice system to administrate. It's not going to take a lot of your time. So that would be another reason. You could go with Office 365, and I would say it's equally as easy to manage. It does have maybe even more features and power, and maybe that's overkill, but and that's another option too. But I would say by and large, most schools, and that was your question, I think, primarily, most schools probably are in that G Suite camp, so it's a good idea to, I think, stick with the Gmail side.
Shifting gears a little bit, then, you mentioned the administrator, and one thing people need to consider as administrators of email for churches and schools or any type of business or whatever is some good policies around email usage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if your person, especially your employee, your staff, faculty, whatever it may be, is sending out things with your school domain as part of their email address, then you're going to want to make sure that they're representing your school well. And we just have a couple of links we'll throw in the show notes with some sample policies. We'd love it if any of our listeners were willing to share some of their sample email policies with us as well. So just good things to consider. Yep. There are, you know, examples here for, I am scrolling, email usage at the company. Keep in mind, don't forward non-business email to other people. And obviously, you know, stating things that are inappropriate shouldn't be included in your email.
Yep.
That kind of thing. So just some good verbiage to consider as you think about policies.
For sure. And that little disclaimer that sits at the bottom of emails you might get from me or Sally, that's something that you would want to consider in your organization as well. It's just kind of legal protection in case the email goes awry. Somebody gets it that they're not there and they shouldn't. You have at least some language there that suggests that what course of action could or should be taken. So we will also put in the show notes, we don't have a lot more time to talk on this topic, but some productivity tips. We've talked about Inbox Zero before. Mind Like Water is a presentation that I've made before that talks about how to get that inbox down a little bit more manageable. Also, we've talked, and maybe even as recent as last summer, maybe it was last fall even, I had a ministry resourced on the waiting for process. So if you're trying to do some delegation, there are some very cool ways to delegate via email and still keep track that you've done that, and you want to circle back at some point to make sure that what was delegated has been done. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well.
And I get all this insight into the psychology as you're delegating things to me. I know what's really happening. Good stuff.
All right. We've got a big question for our listeners we want to throw out there. And it is kind of fitting in with the theme of the back to the basics concept of March. And Sally and I have been throwing around the idea of, well, how do we continue to improve the podcast? And we'd love your feedback on it. For, I don't know how many years now, we've been doing both audio and video. Has it been, I want to say three, four, something like that?
More like six. Seriously, it was around show 250, I think, that we started that.
Wow. So, okay.
Yeah. It's been a while.
So the feedback we'd like is, you know, do you watch the video? We don't really have a great sense for the percentages. I mean, we have some raw numbers, but we would love your feedback. If the video brings a lot to the table, then, you know, we'll consider continuing that. But if it doesn't, if most of you are audio listeners and you get most of what you need out of the audio, we would maybe consider just going back to audio and maybe amping up the production value. That would give us a little bit more time to work on one or the other rather than try to put out or push out both. So send us an email, wellstech@wells.net, or tweet something out to us with #WellsTech, something like that. Just let us know in whatever way you'd like to give us some of your feedback, whether you're an audio listener or a video watcher. And if you are a video watcher, why is that the preferred method? We'd love to hear some feedback on that.
Definitely. Always said I have a face for radio.
Me too. Especially as I gain some years here. So I just my brother's birthday was yesterday, and we're very close in age. We're actually the same age for about a month and a half here. So it's, you know, it was boom, boom for my mom. But so he always holds that over me when we're the same age for the month and a half. I'm the older brother. But you know, the years take their toll. So,
and we're blessed beyond measure. Not complaining, but
we're not. But if we don't have to show our faces on video, it might save everybody some whatever. Let's move on to news and tech.
A couple of things to mention in the news and tech segment of Wells Tech today. One is that Google has launched a Hangouts chat, which isn't something new, but it's a regular G Suite tool now available for G Suite users, kind of baked in. And it has been, the ante's upped a little bit. It looks a lot like Slack. So it's a Slack competitor that Google's putting out there as a built-in tool now for G Suite users. And so administrators should have seen this rolling out to them over the last couple of weeks. And I'm curious if anybody's making use of Hangouts chat on their Google apps administration.
Interesting. I have not tried this or actually even looked at it. Have you looked in any more depth than just the article there, Sally?
Just the article here. So okay. I can tell just by looking at it, it's definitely a Slack competitor. It's got that look and feel.
So you have where chat rooms
or threads and yeah. Threads.
Interesting. Makes sense as they've been in this game for a while and it's just kind of bringing all the pieces together.
Exactly. One more newsy item that you found, Martin, was something called Microsoft Soundscape.
Yeah,
this is interesting. A map delivered in 3D sound, it says.
Yeah, the concept, and I don't know that this is, I think it's maybe still in beta or even earlier, but Microsoft has taken great interest in accessibility apps. And what this does, as far as I can tell, is if you are visually impaired and have this app on your phone, it'll give you little hints, like maybe a guide dog would, about you know, what obstacles might be in your way or to kind of keep you headed in the right direction if you're out on the street or whatever. And it does this through, obviously, GPS, but I think some awareness by bouncing off audio signals as well. So it's a very smart app. And then if you're wearing, let's say, headphones, something like that, it will maybe give you a little audio indicator in one ear or the other as far as, you know, which way to expect something or to move or to sense that there's, hey, something there. So it'd be interesting to watch this as it goes forward, because this is this seems to be a great application of technology for those that could use this.
Yeah, excellent. To see how it develops, huh?
Let's go to Wells now.
I'm excited about Wells Now because we have a big announcement regarding our Wells Education, Technology, and Leadership Summit, which is scheduled to happen next summer, June 25th through 27th, 2019. And we are looking for people to present at the summit. And so we have released our call for presenters, and we'll have a link in the show notes over at wellsedtechlead.com/call for presenters. And we're looking for all different types of speakers, anything related to education, technology, and leadership and ministry settings. So we have some starter ideas there for you, and there's a form to complete where you can give us your contact information and then tell us about your proposed session. And our committee will be meeting this summer and making some final decisions on which presenters we will have at the conference, but we'd love it if that includes you. We are offering one night's lodging, and that's not at any old run-of-the-mill hotel. We're holding
this conference. Not a Motel 6 kind of deal.
It isn't. It's at the Kalahari Resort in Wisconsin Dells, which is a very popular water park resort. And they
I think the free night includes the water access to the water park.
Definitely. It does, yes. And we'll include a stipend for travel and an honorarium as well. So we hope you'll consider this. This is the first time, Martin, that we've had a conference since our 2015 conference, which was just an amazing event. And we're hoping to draw in all those same tech leaders and lay people all different stripes to this conference, but to broaden the scope of it, including education and leadership. So there'll be all kinds of offerings there for you.
Very good.
Yep. One more conference to plug, and that is the Wells International Youth Rally happening this summer at Bowling Green State University in Ohio. The dates for that are June 26th through 29th, and the registration is now open. You have to be a youth leader to register for your entire group, but the cost per person is $345. And that's going to go up on May 1st. That's the early bird price. So on May 1st, it'll go up to $370. So now's the time to be gathering all the information you need to bring your youth to the International Youth Rally happening this summer.
Any of your kids go to a youth rally, Sally?
Yeah, we have sent people in the past, and it's been a very exciting experience for them. So.
I think two of my kids have been, and boy, it was a great experience for them as well. So highly recommended. The price is good, and I hear the venue's awesome as well down in Bowling Green.
Awesome. Very good.
All right, let's move on to the point in our show where you and I pick something that we'd like to share with the class, something that has caught our fancy. It could be a piece of hardware, software, a website, an article, something that we want to share that hopefully you might find interesting as well. And I think both of ours have at least something peripherally to do with email.
Imagine that. Topic of the day, going back to basics. And one of my favorite things about Gmail is that they have something called Labs. And Labs is basically additional little add-ons and things that you can make use of in Gmail. And I have used Canned Response as a lab add-on in my Gmail. So I have opened my my Gmail account, and I was just going to show you how to do that. You can find Labs under Settings on your Gmail account. So when you open up Settings, there's a lot of links across the top, and Labs is the third from the last link. And then there's a list of all kinds of things that you can enhance your Gmail with. The one that I'm discussing today is called Canned Responses. It's the second one in the list for me. So when I click on Enable, then I have to find the Save Changes button down at the bottom, and then that'll be turned on in my Gmail. So the way it works is it's really handy for people that have to respond to email from people asking the same question repetitively. So you come up with a canned response to your email. So, you know, whatever it is, you type up the answer is dot, 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 and have that response saved. You can put in the subject of your email, whatever it is. And then in your Gmail, there's an arrow in the lower right corner where it brings up more options. And canned responses is one of the items on that list once you enable that lab. So you can say that this is a new canned response and you can give it a title. I'm just going to call mine test and say okay. And then the next time you do an email and you want to respond in the same way, when you click the arrow for canned responses, your canned response is going to be sitting there and you can insert it right into your email. So my answer that I spent a long time typing up and, you know, worked hard on, I can just throw right into the email without having to redo that time and time again. So I can imagine that being really helpful for people that are responding to questions about your church or school, some of the basics that you repeat to people on a regular basis. You can let Gmail do the work for you, use this Labs canned response. So that's my pick of the week.
Lots of application for that. Neat. Mm-hmm. That's been around a long time too. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised it's just still in Labs and not just kind of a built-in feature.
Right.
So it's a nice tool. Mm-hmm. All right. My pick of the week is something called Drafts. And this is for iOS users, so iPhone or iPad. And I'm just going to attempt to do something I failed at last week, and that's share my screen. So I'm going to bring this up real quickly. And for those of you listening at home, I'll do my best to describe what this looks like. And the point of the application is to grab bits of text, and actually let me show you my home screen. So if you look at an iPhone, you have all your icons on the home screen, and there's a tray at the bottom that are kind of those items that you want everywhere. And so for me, it's Messages, Phone, Safari, and my last one, which is kind of a precious spot, is for Drafts. And when you open up Drafts, it's kind of Spartan. It's basically a blinking cursor waiting for you to type something. And up pops the keyboard and some formatting things and some suggestions and then a few icons at the top. But what Drafts is supposed to do, and it's kind of methodology, is it's the one place that you go to enter any kind of text. So it is a text entry mechanism, and the concept is you don't have to think about any other of the tools that you have in your whole suite of applications on your iPhone in this case. You just want to get this stuff out of your brain. And this is kind of a productivity inbox zero kind of concept where if something's on your brain, you want to get it off as quickly as possible or you'll forget it no matter where you are. And so Drafts is kind of just sitting there waiting for you to enter whatever it is that's in your head that you want to get out of your head into your what's called trusted system. So Drafts kind of is that trusted system. And once you put it in there, so let's say I have to remember to get milk, I'll just type in milk. And that's really all you need to do. There's no save button. It auto saves it. You can close the app. And you'll notice that the app and in the iPhone and Android, you have these little badges that get attached to them that show how many account of how many items there might be, maybe new messages, whatever, new calendar items. So Drafts has that as well. So in my Drafts, I have the number one badge sitting there. If I open it up, it's going to come back to that. But if I swipe in from the left, it's going to show me all of the all the drafts that I have. And you can archive these, you can keep these kind of as a history, you can throw them away. But where the power really is that you have to figure out during your day at some point to clear out your drafts. And to do that, all you do is you select it, you open it. So for instance, I have milk open on the screen. What do I want to do with that? It's in Drafts, but I actually want to get it in my reminders list. So I swipe from the right, and I have very quick and easy selections of what to do with that text. including copy to clipboard, email. I can message it. I can use the share sheet that comes with iOS, which would share it to, you know, messages, Trello, Twitter, Facebook, my inbox, OneNote, mail, whatever. And then you can custom configure different places that you can send that text. So for me, I have one called Shopping List. So if I click Shopping List, all it does is it immediately archives the draft. So I have no more drafts sitting in my inbox. But if I go to my Reminders List and go to the Shopping List, now I have milk sitting there. So I didn't have to kind of go into the app, hit the create button, whatever. I just went into one app all the time is kind of the concept that you don't have to, you don't have to think about it. You just go to drafts, you enter the text, and then at some point you process it. So you might have five things that get entered throughout the day. Could be short blips of text, could be things that you want to put in your project management system or in OneNote. Could go anywhere. Could be a start of an email. All those things could go into drafts. And then when you process it, you quickly go through them and then you send them out to the different applications that, they belong to. One really neat feature, if you have an Apple Watch, is there's the there's a drafts app that, gets installed on the Apple Watch, and there's a little button you can press where you can speak into the application, and it will automatically funnel back into your phone and go into drafts. So if you're on the road or you don't have access to your phone or don't want to pull it out of your pocket or purse and you have an Apple Watch, you click the button and you speak whatever it is you want to throw in there. And then at some point in the future, so you've got it out of your brain, it's into your system. And then at some point when you process your drafts, there it is. And then you forward it to, or you can edit it. You can add formatting and then forward it to wherever, send it on to wherever its final resting place is. So really like it. I've only been using it for about a week. It's not a free application. It costs $4.99. It's available on iPhone and iPad. So if you buy it for one or the other, you get it on both. One thing that I wish it had was a client that would be on the Mac or an app that would be on the Mac itself, but they don't have that. But it's really meant for getting this stuff quickly out of your head into your system and then processing it. So like it so far, and it's well worth the $4.99 for me. It's just a quick way to, kind of get stuff into the system and then on its way.
I was really enjoying your your discussion, but I didn't want to hack over you, so I muted myself so I could cough. So, all right, but yeah, I'm sensing that your productivity is going to skyrocket now that you have drafts,
well,
Martin. So
it's baby steps, but this I mean there is a difference. I mean it is a leap for you to know that you want to do something and then figure out what app you need to open to do it in. Versus mm-hmm. I've got this idea, thought, whatever, let's just get it in there and then figure out what to do with it after that. So it's a really nice concept and a discipline mm-hmm. that hopefully I can stick with and we'll boost that productivity. So
reminds me of the little pad of paper in your pocket.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I used to do that. I used to have a pen and paper, and this just kind of saves a step. And one of the reasons that I went with a paper pen process was it was maybe not even socially acceptable at the time, and this was maybe 5-6 years ago, to pull out your phone and start tapping away. I think those days are behind us. I think it's okay now to people understand that, hey, this is where you keep your stuff. So
yep. Well, Sally, what a lead in
to our ministry resource. Yes, a nice lead in. Yes.
A nice lead into our ministry resource, which happens to be something that's coming up this weekend, Martin. March 10th marks the annual National Day of Unplugging. We have someone else is really misbehaving. So you're going to have to trust me on this and check out the links later in the show notes. But we have talked about National Day of Unplugging on the show in the past, Martin. It's actually something done by a Jewish group, so they bill it March 9th and 10th, sundown to sundown. So however you want to celebrate, it's a good opportunity to take stock of how much we depend on these devices that are in our pocket and how often we are tapping away on them. And maybe their thing is, if you sign up, they will send you a sleeping bag for your phone so that you can put it to sleep in a little bag and not use it. And they also have resources on their site, like signs you can print. I unplugged too. I think on Saturday we're going to take a little trip in our RV just to get her out and let her feel what spring feels like. And so we're going to take a trip, and I'm going to do my best to not use my phone during that trip, just to enjoy the day out. And I think it's a great resource to kind of keep in mind, especially in this day and age when we do have challenges with digital addictions and spending too much time, that maybe this is something that pastors and teachers could even reference and dig into some of their resources and the things that they provide to help encourage unplugging. You know, they're all about ideas like family board game nights and things like that, just to get you to connect without the use of your digital devices. So good concept here.
Well, I'll have to remember that you'll be off the grid on Sunday and not to expect an immediate response to an email or text. So
yeah, wonderful. You'll have to take a sheet of paper to write on.
Huh? I like the sleeping bag concept. That's cute. So
yeah, for sure.
All right, let's move on to community feedback.
And we did have a little community feedback from our friend Leslie Bergman. Hi, Leslie. She is a webmaster over at goodshepherds.net, which is Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in West Allis, Wisconsin, and a longtime Wells Tech follower. And we always enjoy hearing from Leslie. She was writing to us in follow-up to our show last week, Martin, where we talked with Professor Rachel Feld from Martin Luther College about school communication via website and training people and getting people engaged with your school website. And Leslie wrote to say that they're using a communication software called Fast Direct. That's not one that we talked about specifically last week, but we'll have to check that out. It is a great tool, but it resulted in some of the school's website classroom pages becoming nearly empty of content, except for a link to Fast Direct, where parents are presented with a login, and so non-school families couldn't see anything. So they kind of went to the extreme, put everything behind the walled garden concept, and made it safe for them to share with their school parents, but it left people who were perhaps school shopping out of the loop as to what that classroom was like. And so Leslie said that they are encouraging faculty members to create informative and inviting static classroom pages that don't require constant updating, but still give the visitor a flavor for what's happening in the classroom. So just a word of caution. You know, there are some great tools out there. Fast Direct may very well be one that you should check out, but, you know, don't leave those your classroom webpage in a lurch if you don't have anything there for them to see.
Great point. Yeah, I've got, I think our church, our school is probably in a similar situation. I just redid the website, and there is not much for content from the classrooms themselves. We got some general school information, but I'm sure that it would be helpful for the visitor, the prospective parent considering your school, to have a better look rather than just kind of the brochureware stuff that you know, is out there for the school. So good stuff. Thank you, Leslie. If you'd like to contribute, we already mentioned our email address, wellstech@wells.net is a great way to get a hold of us. But we're on all the social networks, Facebook, Twitter. If you want to follow us on Twitter, WellsTech is our at WellsTech is our handle. But hashtag WellsTech on Google Plus or wherever, and we'll get the information. You can go to our show notes page too, wellstech.wells.net, leave a comment on any of the shows that are listed there, and we'll get it there as well. We have a video of the week, and it actually is a great series of videos. We'll do just the overview video for drafts, which was my pick of the week. David Sparks, a big Mac guy. He has actually a very good podcast. Mac Power Users is the name of the podcast, but he does a lot of these screencasts for a lot of Mac productivity type pieces of software, and he's done a whole series on drafts, which is done by Agile Tortoise. I love the name of their company, Agile Tortoise. So if you want to just kind of get a sense for a little bit better sense for drafts other than what I just described, he does a much better job and is a much more proficient drafts user. Take a look at this video of the week before you make your buying decision if you are an iOS user. Sally, what are we going to do next week?
We are sticking with the basics, Martin, and we're looking forward to talking about document management, both from a personal perspective and also an administrative perspective, and how to organize and access and be efficient with documents. And to join us in that conversation, we're hoping to get in an interview with Drew Willems, find a good time on his schedule. He is a teacher and technology coordinator at Lakeside Lutheran High School, and I know Drew's big on G Suites and has a lot of experience working with students and faculty and staff on managing documents. So looking forward to talking with Drew.
All right, very good. So tune in next week for episode 540, and Sally will be fresh off her unplugged day and her ride in her brand new, to her, RV, home away from home, soon to be home. And we hope that you will come back and spend a little time with us next week as well as we talk about our Back to the Basics series. Thanks for being here. We will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.